From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
SoMa.
I'm from Berkeley.
Concord, Cali.
Tenderloin District.
La Mission.
The Mission District.
Noe Valley.
I live in Silver Terrace.
Coming up, we find a sympathetic ear in time of need.
You don't really need to have a mental health issue to call the warm line. If you're stressed out and you need someone to talk to, that's enough for us to be here.
Then we do the listening to the punk rock of choral music.
Anybody can do it. My friends who are into punk rock are all over it because I just tell them it's all about do-it-yourself music.
And we find out the answer to this week's Audiograph Mystery Sound.
May everybody have a great race today. Do not run too fast and do not drink too hard.
On your mark, get set, Cross Currents is coming up. Mental health care workers recently picketed at Kaiser Permanente locations around the state. They were protesting the firing of a psychiatrist who they say had been fired for complaining about system-wide delays in patient care. Clement Papazian is a psychiatric social worker at Kaiser's Oakland Medical Center.
Kaiser does not staff its psychiatry clinics with enough psychologists, therapists, and social workers to handle the caseload. That's the crux of the matter.
And a report released in February by the California Department of Managed Health Care did find that mental health patients had to wait too long to receive care.
For patients suffering from depression, panic disorder, or other serious mental illnesses, these delays can be insurmountable obstacles, and the consequences can be devastating.
In a written response, a Kaiser Permanente spokesman said Kaiser did not retaliate against the psychiatrist, and it has increased its number of therapists working at its California clinics in recent years. One place people can turn to seek immediate support for a mental health emergency is a crisis hotline. About 70,000 people call San Francisco's 24-hour crisis line each year. Making that call usually means someone is on the verge of self-harm because of severe emotional distress. But San Francisco has launched a new service that's aimed at reaching people before they're on the brink of crisis. KALW's Audrey Dilling has the story.
So here's a scenario you might relate to. Let's say it's late at night, you've got a big presentation at work tomorrow, and you're not prepared. You've just had too much going on in your personal life, and now you're freaking out. You can't sleep. It would really help to talk to someone, but no one's around. Well, there's actually a number you can call in situations like these. And if you dial it, you might hear this on the other end.
Thank you for calling the San Francisco Healthcare Warm Line. This is Daisy.
Daisy Mathias is one of the counselors at San Francisco's Warm Line, a peer-run support line for people who need someone to talk to.
Then it's your turn. Like, you could tell us what you want. You could just open up. In fact, if you need to bawl out, just cry. Or you could say, I'm stressed, I'm lonely.
Being a peer counselor means Mathias has dealt with a lot of the same issues that people are calling her about. She's not a certified therapist by any means, but she has other qualifications.
For example, I'm a person who has been diagnosed with a learning disability, a person who has social anxiety, and I don't know what else.
You don't have to be diagnosed with anything to call, and you don't have to be in crisis. That's one big difference between the warm line and suicide hotlines.
You don't really need to have a mental health issue to call the warm line. If you're stressed out and you need someone to talk to, that's enough for us to be here.
What it does is that it provides a space for people to talk about things before they reach a level where it would be considered a mental health concern.
Melody Jarvis has managed the warm line since it launched less than a year ago. It started with funding from a state grant. The goal was to reduce hospitalizations for mental health issues and improve access to support services. Warm line counselors are trained to refer callers to affordable therapy options.
And I remember our very first day, I was training all the new counselors who were here, and we only received one call our first day. But then very quickly, we started receiving more and more calls. And then now, we receive up to, 70, 80 calls per day.
It turns out a lot of those calls are coming from outside the Bay Area. And the Warm Line's online chat service is actually being used by people around the world. This wide reach says something to Melody Jarvis.
I think it's a sign that this is a very necessary service that's needed in every county and every state.
Jarvis says part of the Warm Lines' appeal is this peer support thing. In a more traditional situation, a therapist or whoever answers a crisis line doesn't usually reveal anything personal. But Jarvis has found that hearing from someone who's been there before does a lot for Warm Line callers.
For example, somebody might call and say, you know, I've just started this medication and it's making me feel really nauseous all the time and it's just really hard to get through my day. Well, our counselors, as peer counselors, can say, yeah, I've taken that medication too and it made me really nauseous when I first started taking it. And then here's how I, like, coped with that, and here's how that, you know, I was able to get through that and, you know, move on. So, I mean, that kind of thing is sort of revolutionary.
But the great thing about our line is we don't necessarily have to sound like that, oh, what seems to be the problem? Like, you know, it's just, it sometimes can feel like you're talking to a friend.
Warm Line counselor Daisy Mathias says that feeling is something she could have used when she was struggling with her own mental health, starting back in high school.
I come from a very, I'll just say this, very traditional Catholic family from Mexico. And I'm a very liberal, pagan, feminist. And, oh, on top of that, I was also that weird goth girl in school.
Is your hair always that color?
Well, for people on the radio, if you can't see, my hair color is a yellow and then goes orange, red, dark red, and then purple.
So pretty early on, Mathias started looking outside her home for someone to talk to.
Well, I didn't grow up with the most wealthy family, so I didn't really have very good internet access at the time. So I mostly used the 411, but they mostly transferred me to crisis lines. But there were moments where a crisis line would not be the one to help me because I needed to talk and vent. But since they're trained to handle people who are in crisis who will hurt themselves, I didn't feel I could go to them immediately.
Now, as a Warm Line peer counselor, Mathias gets to have that conversation she needed all the time. She's just on the other end.
For me, I actually enjoy some of the conversations we have. I can't really list any examples.
Mathias is incredibly protective of what her callers share with her. Everything is totally confidential.
But I will say that there are people who call that have anxiety that actually help me, because not only do I share things that have helped me with my anxiety, they tell me things that help them with their anxiety. And I say that one because that's what I have. And it ends up benefiting you both. And it's so great to hear, like, some common stories that we all have.
There's stories that don't get talked about out in the open very much, but there are lines open for them, for as long as people need to vent or just feel heard. Once that happens, Mathias says the call usually ends like this.
I'm done venting. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.
Right now, like the handful of other Warm Lines around the country, the San Francisco Warm Line operates on limited hours. But manager Melody Jarvis says the plan is to go 24/7 as soon as possible. For Cross Currents, I'm Audrey Dilling.
The phone number for San Francisco's peer-run Warm Line is 1-855-845-7415. That's 855-845-7415. Counselors are available Monday through Thursday from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. and Friday through Sunday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. This information is also up at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. If talking things out isn't for you, then you might want to try singing. Sacred harp singing is considered to be one of the oldest forms of American folk music. It's a choral style developed in the churches of colonial New England back in the 1700s. It's a participatory tradition that eventually took root in the rural South. Singers perform for themselves and not for an audience. Today, sacred harp is experiencing something of a renaissance. Some even characterize it as the punk rock of choral music. In Berkeley, a sacred harp group formed just over 10 years ago and is slowly attracting more members. Shani Aviram went to find out what's drawing people to revive this centuries-old tradition.
This is not a rehearsal. It's not a performance either, but these singers are belting out the tunes. The Bay Area Sacred Harp Group usually meets in Berkeley, but today there are about 60 people crammed in a small wooden room at the Potrero Hill neighborhood house in San Francisco. They're sitting around a hollow square where each side represents a voice in a four-part harmony: bass, tenor, alto, and treble.
What is Sacred Harp?
That's Hannah Blair, an artist from San Francisco.
I have been working on a short explanation of this, actually, ever since I got this tattoo.
She points to the notes of a hymn called Africa, tattooed on her left arm. It's written in shape notes, rectangles, diamonds, and triangles.
And realized the very next day that I was going to spend the rest of my life explaining Sacred Harp to people.
Sacred harp is one of the oldest forms of American folk music. It was developed in the churches of New England 200 years ago. The brash singing style quickly died out as music scholars of the day dismissed it as too crude for church. The tradition eventually took root in the rural South, where it is still sung to this day. Since the 1980s, sacred harp is experienced what some call an urban revival in cities all over the country. But even as the music catches on with a new generation of singers, Blair still finds it hard to explain its appeal without adding a few disclaimers.
You know, I'm not religious, and it's, you know, San Francisco. We sing in church, you know, but like it's just in a church. It's not like at church, but I do feel sometimes like it's a bit of a guilty pleasure in San Francisco.
It's a guilty pleasure because the words are steeped in evangelical Christian theology.
Well, the words are a stumbling block for a lot of people when they start singing the music.
That's Dan Harper. He's a minister at the Unitarian Church in Palo Alto. He says even if you have a problem with the religious lyrics of Sacred Harp, that doesn't have to stop you from singing it.
So there's a lot of people who sing all kinds of music and they have no interest in the words at all, but they just like the music. So you think about a lot of the American standards right out of the American songbook, and the words are totally meaningless. I mean, Moonlight Over Vermont, who the hell cares about Moonlight Over Vermont? But we sing it because it's a wonderful song. So I think a lot of people approach Sacred Harp music that way, is you don't worry too much about the words.
And the singing itself can be a hard sell. Sacred harp is loud. The harmonies are unusual and not quite in tune. But music lovers of all walks of life are finding ways to relate to the 200-year-old tradition. Blair says the first time she attended the weekly singing in Berkeley, it took her back to her past when she was in a metal band.
We were a really noisy band. I did a lot of screaming, and there was something as different as being in the band was from Sacred Harp. There was something equally physical about Sacred Harp, you know, singing as loud as I could and running out of air in a lot of the songs. And then just the experience of making music with a bunch of people who were also really excited to be there. And it was a really intense experience to have with a bunch of strangers.
It's an intense experience for Harper too, but for a different reason.
It's partly because anybody can do it. My friends who are into punk rock are all over it, because then I just tell them it's all about do-it-yourself music, and that gets a lot of people too.
Like in punk rock, you don't have to be classically trained or be exactly on pitch to sing Sacred Harp songs. They're written in shape notes, a notation system that was designed to be easier to sight read so that anyone can pick it up and sing.
So we have four notes there. You have the triangle is fa.
Cassie Allen is a singer from Rome, Texas.
And you can say it fa or fa, either way. People sing it both ways. They kind of do a fa.
She's conducting a singing school for an enthusiastic Bay Area crowd.
Fa. That's how the old people.
Singing schools are part of the inclusive tradition of sacred harp and shape note singing. Their purpose was to teach congregations to sight sing so every member could take part in the service.
Part of sacred harp singing is blending. We don't care how loud you sing, really. We don't care if you sing off tune. But most of the time when you break up in parts like that, you tend to try to blend together.
Sacred harp is sung in four-part dispersed harmony. That means every vocal line can exist independently from one another, but when sung together, they create a unique texture of voices.
Oh, may we all, oh, may we all remember well.
As Allen explains, sacred harp is ultimately a communal experience. That's why it's about blending all these different voices together. She says it's not about how you sing. And Hannah Blair says it's also not about what you believe.
Part of the tradition is that it doesn't matter what your politics are, what your beliefs are, who you are, what you're doing. It's rare that you find a group that all you have to do is want to be a member. And you are.
Maybe that's why the sacred harp tradition travels so well outside of its southern home. It welcomes anyone who wants to do it. Blair says that she will always be a part of a larger community, no matter where a singing takes place. The rough sound and the religious tone might take newcomers some getting used to, but the experience of singing loudly in four-part harmony with a bunch of people is hard to resist. For Cross Currents, I'm Shani Aviram.
Find a schedule for Bay Area Sacred Harp Singing events at our website, KALW.org. Click on Cross Currents.
Well, you know I'm tired.
I'm tired. So need
you. I'm tired.
I'm tired. So need you.
Lord, I'm tired.
I'm tired. So need you.
I'm gonna find myself
resting.
Well,
I'm tired.
I'm tired. So need you.
I'm so tired. So need you.
Well, I'm
tired. So tired. So need you.
I'm gonna
find myself resting.
Lord, I'm tired.
So tired.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. Here's Audiograph's Julie Kane.
In today's show, we've been talking about coming together and being part of something bigger than just one person. For this week's Audiograph, we've been playing you the sound of a communal experience that's been making noise in San Francisco for over 100 years. It's an event that's part competition, part costume party, and part bacchanal. To tell us more about it, we sent KALW's Jeremy Dalmas and Liz Mack into the fray. Here's who they met.
All of your remarks. Get set.
My name's Jackson Potts. We're downtown. We're near the Embarcadero at the start line of Beta Breakers. Well, I'm Pepe Le Pew. I'd have like a little skunk head. I've got my flowers, and I'm looking forward to running along the course, doing a couple Pepe Le Pew lines. Some of them are it's like mon chéri, I'm proceeding in your direction. It's like hello, my name is Pepe. Allow me to introduce myself, your lover. May everybody have a great race today. Do not run too fast and do not drink too hard.
This is the Hash House Harriers. It's a drinking club with a running problem. We are a worldwide phenomenon. And we drink and we run and we drink and we run and we drink and we run and we drink and we run. We all have nicknames so that in our regular professional lives, no one can ever know that this is in fact what we do for fun. My hash name is Head Queen. And that's I'm Drunk.
That's his name.
That's his name. His name is I'm Drunk. Her hash name is Come On With Me and Your Mattress Is Free. Barely Man Below! Come here! I need a hash on quick.
I love Rambo!
Yeah, Rambo Lennon!
Can I ask you your name?
Sue Valentine. We're across from Alamo Square Park. We've lived here for 25 years. Up until about 5 years ago, it was a family event, very fun. We put the chairs here so people don't urinate on our porch. Everybody up and down the street has problems with vandalism, public urination, drunkenness, people vomiting on their porches.
Does any part of you enjoy this at all?
We used to enjoy it very much. Yes. We enjoyed the costumes, we enjoyed the camaraderie, enjoyed the people, yes.
But now?
Now it's a drunken brawl.
Woo!
Go first!
Never nude!
Never nude!
JK, I'm just JK. Okay. And this is Kevin, the preacher. We're born-again Christians. We're local from the Bay Area, East Bay. And we're just out here preaching the Bible, telling people about Jesus, repentance, turn from sin, turn to Jesus.
When you recognize your sin and truth, and you humble yourself,
You don't mind if I give high fives while we do this, right? I'm a high-five Jesus. I'm trying to set the record for high fives today.
What does your sign say?
It says, Jesus loves high fives.
Can I ask you what your real name is?
JT Dermody.
And is this a conversion tactic at all?
Only if it converts them to giving high fives. Jesus loves, and he loves high fives.
Thanks.
Can I get 10?
There you go. There's 10.
Love you,
Jesus. Love
you. Yes, I'm Claudia Kellosch. I'm 50 years old. I'm from Germany originally. I live in San Diego. I also am a nude finisher. I've been nude in the Beta Breakers every single year. So I've been doing it every year for 17 years. I'm wearing a little fanny pack where I'm hiding my underwear. And I have really good race running shoes because that's really important. And I have a hat and it reads, Bear to Breakers.
Let's do that, folks. You don't see this every day. This is a great finish to a great race. It's unbelievable.
My name's Kevin. I'm again.
So, did you just run the race?
I did, yeah.
How'd it go?
It went pretty well. It was a little hot, actually, in the costume, but I'm dressed as Uncle Sam right now. Well, it's fairly nice to run in. The pants are easy to move in. The hat stays on real tight, so... it was better than the reindeer costume that I had.
San Franciscans love to dress up.
Yeah, oh, they love to dress up. Everybody has a costume box, you know, at home, so.
All right, you guys, put some noise out there. Come on! Thank you so much, Spider-Man. You guys are truly grooving. We hope to see you next year. Get home safely. Get home safely, all right?
Thanks to everybody who talked to our reporters at this year's Beta Breakers. A lot of you knew where we recorded this week. Our winner is Matthew Smith. Congratulations. We're going to send you a KALW t-shirt. For the rest of you, here's your sneak listen to the latest from Audiograph.
Can I get a piece of cardboard so it sounds more?
Just hold it.
Okay. Ready, set, go.
The fastest is wax paper.
Yeah, probably.
Oh my god, it's so fast.
Think you know what that was and where we recorded it? Give us a call at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. I can't wait to hear from you. Thanks for listening and thanks for playing. I'm Julie Kane.
Thanks, Julie. You can also email us at news@klw.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW.
Our team includes Leela Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Hannah Kingsley-Ma, Casey Miner, Ted Muldoon, Raja Shah, Seth Samuel, Judy Silber, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Audrey Dilling. Our managing editor is Jen Sheehan. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Bay Area vocalist Derek Lassiter. His sound has been called Dark Soul. He and his band will debut some new unrecorded songs at the Red Poppy Art House in San Francisco this Saturday. Doors open at 7:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba. And the truth was
of light, of water, of blood.